It is humanity's grail, the search in our lives for meaning, fulfillment, joy, happiness, whatever you want to call it. And there is certainly no shortage of people who say they can get you to this place, usually for a price. But here with Jennifer Jones of KGO Radio San Francisco is someone who's dedicated his life to conducting serious, scholarly, university research on this issue. And he's going to share some of his findings with us right now.
He is Professor Mihai Csikszentmihalyi. His life's work has been to study what makes people truly happy and gives meaning to their lives. Drawing upon years of systematic research, he developed the concept of flow as a metaphorical description of the rare mental state associated with feelings of optimal satisfaction and fulfillment. Professor Csikszentmihalyi's credentials are, to say the least, impressive. He is C.S. and D.J. Davidson Professor of Psychology at the Peter F. Drucker Graduate School of Management at the acclaimed Claremont Graduate University and Director of the Quality of Life Research Center at Claremont. He's also Emeritus Professor of Human Development at the University of Chicago, where he chaired the Department of Psychology. Professor Csikszentmihalyi is a former resident scholar at the Rockefeller Center at Bellagio and a resident fellow at the Center for Advanced Studies in the Behavioral Sciences in Palo Alto and a senior Fulbright Fellow in Brazil and New Zealand. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the American Academy of Political and Social Science, the American Psychological Society, the National Academy of Education, the National Academy of Leisure Studies, and a foreign member of the Hungarian Academy of Sciences. Serving on the editorial boards of numerous professional journals, Professor Csikszentmihalyi has been a consultant to business, government organizations, educational associations, and cultural institutions, and has given invited lectures throughout the world. In addition to the hugely influential Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience, published in 1990, he is the author of 13 other books, translated into 23 different languages, and some 245 research articles. His most recent book is Good Business: Leadership, Flow, and the Making of Meaning. Professor, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. With all that you've done, you're probably best known for the development of the flow theory. What is the flow theory?
Well, it was something that I started developing about 35 years ago or so when I became interested why so many people devoted a lot of time doing things that they didn't get any kind of obvious rewards or material rewards from, like people play chess 20 hours a day or climb mountains or rock and play music, and they do it essentially for what? That was the question. I mean, that it kind of contradicted our notion that human behavior is motivated by goals that you're trying to achieve in terms of, you know, either it's a paycheck or a good grade in school or something external. All of these people seem to have been doing these things and sometimes risking their lives and devoting a lot of time for no good reason, so to speak. So I was trying to understand what was the reason. There must have been something motivating them to do these things. And when I started asking them why they do this, what they get out of climbing mountains or playing music and so forth, what was really strange, which I didn't expect, was that in all of these very different activities, people described the reason as being a kind of a state of mind, a state of experience, which had very similar characteristics, great focus, kind of clarity, and not feeling in control of what you were doing, etc. There were seven or eight characteristics that were generally there all the time. And so many of the people kept describing what they were doing as being carried away by something that they didn't have to do much themselves. Like they were carried away like by a flow, by a current, taking them down river, so to speak. So I ended up calling all of these ways of feeling when you are involved with what you are doing the flow experience. That's how it started, and then it became more and more kind of scientific bent. Originally, it was very just a kind of a description of how people felt when they did something for the sake just of doing it and not because they wanted something else later.
Well, it's like, so in other words, you're not going to get a blue ribbon at the end of whatever mm-hmm. this particular task is, or you're not going to get a nice pat on the back from your mom and dad, or mm-hmm. and but also when you're talking about flow, is it sort of an adrenaline or sort of a like a self-satisfaction?
Well, the physiological aspects of it, of course, are there, and like everything we do is based on some internal change in the chemistry of hormones and in the electric behavior of the brain. But what motivates these things is the feeling that you are stretching yourself, trying to achieve a goal, and finding that you can get closer to that goal. As a rock climber would say, you know, that every step is a feeling of accomplishment. It's not getting to the top that matters really, but it's the progress up the hill that gets you the feeling of accomplishment. And then, you know, at the top you spend half a minute taking a few pictures and then you get down. But it's the really the kind of feeling that, hey, I'm doing something that is difficult and I can accomplish it.
So can you tell me, what are the conditions that need to be present to create flow?
Yeah, well, generally, there are three major things that people seem to respond to when they get involved in flow. And those are the fact that there's a very clear goal that you want to accomplish, like when you're playing music, you know what the next chord or the next note you want to play should be, that you get very clear feedback as to how well you're doing. Again, here, if you're playing music or sing or something, you hear whether you are hitting the notes the way they're supposed to be. So the clarity of goals, immediacy of feedback are two. The third one is that you feel that your skills match the challenges of the activity or the situation, so that if you have too much challenge, you start feeling worried or anxious. If there are too few challenges, you feel bored. But if you are more or less on the same level of skill that the challenges are, then you can begin to focus on what you're doing and get lost in the activity. So those are kind of the general conditions that people report, no matter what they are doing, whether they are writing poetry or playing tennis or whatever they are doing.
So it's not just, say, athletes that can experience this.
Oh no, the you know, we studied poets, we studied scientists. A whole variety of surgeons, for instance. Surgeons love doing surgery, and they say surgery is almost like taking heroin. It's so addictive. And the reason is they say that they know minute by minute or second by second what needs to be done as they're cutting an operation, and then they see whether they're doing right or wrong by the amount of blood in the cavity. If they had cut an artery, there's blood gushing, and they know they made a mistake. So they have to be focused not to make the mistake and to do the achieve the goal they are striving for. And when the surgery is right, as difficult as they can make it, but not more, that's when they feel really kind of in the state of incredible involvement, so that, as they say, you know, the roof could fall in and they would notice it, you know.
You know, what you're describing reminds me of what I often hear marathon runners after they've completed a marathon, and they ask them, how did you go that last mile, or how did you speed up that last mile? And they talk about a sense of sort of euphoria, where they have hit almost a happy medium of getting their stride and getting the maybe even the psychological part of them all kind of linking together.
Yeah, that's how usually it is in all of this. And as I say, it could be writing poetry, it could be swimming across, from Florida to Cuba or whatever. I mean, they have, we find this in every situation where people feel that they would like to do what they're doing, even if they weren't paid or noticed or anything.
What about just our everyday lives, especially just in sort of our Western lifestyle in the U.S.? Are we in a flow, or are other places in the world finding better flow than we are? And if so, how can we change that?
Yeah, well, it's not an easy recipe. And there are aspects of our life which are flow-producing, but, for instance, driving can be a huge chunk of our life where we feel bored when we get into traffic jams and we have to wait in traffic and so forth. In general, the countries where you find that people seem to have most flow are countries like Denmark or New Zealand, which are fairly small, where people feel secure and yet free to get involved in what they are doing, but there is people can choose among many jobs that and feel that their work is flow producing, and they are not worried, and then they are not under too much pressure and too much strain. Other countries are so boring to live in. There was a president of a European country who asked me to go and help them decide how that country could become less boring, because so many of the young, well-educated young people were leaving the country because it was kind of stagnant, and even though it had a great tradition and great culture in the past, and now it was boring. So,
was that describe a lack of flow then?
Yeah. Well, boredom is one major. Boredom comes when you feel that there are not enough challenges, and you have nothing to do with yourself. You can do. You can use your skills, and you just feel that you are marking time and treading water. And if you are bored, obviously that's one extreme of not being in flow. The other extreme is when there's too much challenge and you feel stressed. Some cultures, some lifestyles are very stressful. Others are not stressful enough and they're boring. Our country is so complex that there are parts which are boring, parts which are stressful, and there are, pockets of flow, like, Silicon Valley used to be, and maybe mm-hmm. still is to some extent, and there are cities where there is a great excitement, and people feel that they can choose the challenges and get immersed in it, and other cities which I feel that really there is nothing to do, and the downtown gets closed up and people live in the suburbs and there's nothing much for them to do. So what I'm saying is there is no one general recipe that would work across such a huge and complex
You were mentioning that country where kids were leaving or students were leaving because there was a lack of flow and you wanted to make it a little more exciting for them. But I think that you were probably talking about college students in that case, or maybe students in the high schools or system. But you were quoted as saying it's not the students that cannot learn. It is that they do not wish to. And when we're talking about flow in the school systems, it kind of sounds like there's a motivational issue rather than the kids just don't have the capacity to learn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those in that country I was mentioning, the kids were already, the people who moved out of the country had finished their education, so they were post-college, and they had learned a lot, but they didn't know what to do with it because there wasn't enough exciting new projects, endeavors, entrepreneurship opportunities. So they just went elsewhere where they could find a challenge. So the reason children in high school in the U.S., for instance, don't want to learn again is because there is a little flow in the classrooms. We find that the major instructional device in high school is still lectures. It's about, the largest proportion of what happens in classroom is lecturing. And lecturing is not very flow. Listening to a lecture is not flow producing. There is about four or five times as much lecturing as there is projects that students have to work on. And when students are working on a project, whether it's theater or history or chemistry or biology, when they're working on projects, they are much more likely to be in flow. But that happens very seldom. So
teachers almost need to do more of a hands-on approach, less lecturing and more hands-on if they're able to?
Well, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's we are not programmed as human beings to sit and listen to people telling us what to do, or what to remember or what to think about. And so it's not challenging. It's not interesting. It's just a chore, and that you can't expect students to be excited about it. And some of them will go through school either because they are convinced that the rewards they will get later for their education will pay off, even though it's boring and now it will be okay later. Either that or a few students actually enjoy playing in their minds with the ideas that the teachers are talking about. If a kid can work with abstract ideas so that they listen to some mathematical proof, that the teacher is talking about, and now they can play with it in their own mind, the students can do that. Those students who can do that will find flow in school, but they are a small minority.
I remember I had an economy teacher, and I found the class to be so terribly boring until one day he said he wanted us all to bring in our electric bills. So we all brought in our parents' electric bills, and we sat down, and he started explaining the electricity bill. And by kind of this, I guess, interaction, I found the class to be so much more exciting for the few days that we discussed that. And it was just something as simple as that. It was just making the kids be involved in it and not just preaching to them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
And then from there, I remember thinking, not only did I like that, but I liked the way that things were calculated. And then that actually kind of turned me on in my accounting class.
Yeah,
it was sort of a cyclical thing. And
yeah.
And I can understand now your kind of flow theory. If you start feeling like you're advancing, you're kind of getting all of these little attaboys without getting a blue ribbon or anything like that, because you're satisfying your own questions in your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. You got it. So that would be flow based on just playing with ideas and with rules and concepts in your mind. And other people find flow by playing with animals and in a pet store or something and trying to make them feel comfortable and friendly and so forth. Others get it by through sports, others get it through painting or through music. So there are thousands of ways of getting flow. I mean, the thing is that some are more important in the sense that we can use them later, like studying, mathematics or accounting or whatever. Those are skills that, if you learn them, will actually also get you the external goodies that, a job, and a good whatever, promotion. There is no reason why you should not enjoy things that will be useful to you later and produce also external rewards, The thing is, we usually divide things we do into two groups. One, we do some things because we like to do them, mm-hmm. but they have no good, they won't pay off in any way in the future. You play cards, you watch TV, you do this and that, and they're fun, but they don't get us really anywhere beyond the momentary enjoyment we get.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are all the other things, which are the serious things we do, work, clean the house, and deal with children, whatever. Those have to be done. Those are things have to be done. They're important, but they're not fun. And we make this distinction. I think what flow theory helps you to see is that distinction is not necessary. You can enjoy things that are useful, and there is no reason to say, okay, I have to do this because it's boring, but I have to do it. Well, if you have to do it, why don't you make it more interesting to yourself so that you enjoy it too, And why don't you enjoy things that can be also useful to you? So that distinction between work and leisure or play and work, that distinction is not really very useful. In fact, it's kind of makes life much more difficult than it should be.
There are a lot of teachers and students and parents right now who are listening, and it seems that flow in our schools really is more about the process of learning than a focus on maybe the content and the facts, and kind of like saying if you get the process of learning right, the results will follow. And with so much of the focus right now on standardized testing and curricula and their accompanying tests with the content-oriented testing, what really needs to happen in our schools to make a proper shift so that kids and parents and teachers, in this case, can experience flow?
Well, we have to realize that we have to pay attention to what kids are like and how they are made, what makes them excited, interested, involved, motivated, instead of thinking of children essentially like little computers that you have to fill up with software and data. I mean, a computer is fine. You just plug it in the wall and it will start working. A child is not like that. A child, you can't just assume that because you are feeding information, feeding data to a child, that the child will want to take that information in. I mean, the kids sit in the school looking at the teacher. The teacher is telling them things, and the children are thinking about something completely different, something else, because it's boring. What they hear is boring, or they don't see its relevance, or, it's like when you had to bring your electric bills from home, you knew what those were.
Right.
And they were concrete things that your parents had to pay for, and you held them, and you knew what somebody explained how they worked. It was like you got a key to something that was worth having, you know. And we have abstracted education to the point that we really believe, for some reason, that all we need to do is lay out the curriculum and the information in the curriculum, and then just pour it into the child, and the child will be sitting there and absorbing this information. But that's not how it works. You have to understand what the child wants to do also, and be able to present the information in a way that makes the child want to learn it on its own. Because once a child begins to see how much fun it is to know things and to be able to work things out, then they will just go by themselves and learn. And you don't even need the teacher except as a kind of guide here and there to tell them what the next challenge is, you know.
Well, Professor, this is fascinating. And what's funny is it just makes so much sense. There's so much A plus B equals C. And it's hard to believe that this hasn't been adopted more into our schools.
Yeah, I know. It's the easy way. We take these things that are easy, and it's easier to think of a child as something in an assembly line that mm-hmm. can be... that we can ignore the child, we can just produce knowledge by feeding it kind of anonymously into equal brains that come down the line, you know. And it's much easier, it's much, in a way, it's cheaper in the short run. It's very
sure.
much more expensive in the long run, because a society that can't get children to enjoy learning is going to be in trouble. You know?
Absolutely. Well, Professor, you are fantastic.
I'm glad that some of these things may work. And I go back now to work myself because I like to do that.
Well, that's good. Then you must have very good flow
okay,
with your work.
Absolutely. Okay.
Professor, thank you. Yeah. You've been great.
With so many students being disengaged in our public schools, the issue of meaning, fulfillment, joy, happiness, it has to be of utmost concern to the administrators and teachers at any school. Now, Joel, how does flow theory and the work of Professor Csikszentmihalyi factor into the Arete School?
Well, you know, Martin, I think the most important thing about a school and education is that kids are natural learners. And if they're natural learners, then they had better want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't want to be there, something's wrong. And so as Professor Csikszentmihalyi just said, it isn't that the kids can't learn, it's that they don't want to. And so this has to be addressed in our schools. And the way we're doing it with the Arete School is, and as Professor Csikszentmihalyi spoke about, the whole thing is, what are the kids interested in? Just like adults, you know, what touches them at a deep level? And for so many kids, it's being physically active and sports. And the other thing that Professor Csikszentmihalyi talked about is intrinsic motivation. So often, kids, when they get older, they go to school and they major in things for the external rewards, mm-hmm. how much money it's going to get them, vacations and, you know, big house and all these kinds of things.
How much people are going to look at him and say, oh, he's, you know.
Right, issues yeah. of power
right.
and prestige right. and vanity.
Right.
And what Professor Csikszentmihalyi is really saying is that when he first studied flow theory, he wanted to know what was it that motivated people to do things just for the sake of doing it.
Hmm.
And so if kids are natural learners, they should be doing that just for the sake of doing that. And we have found in our pilot programs that when you expose kids to sports in a way that integrates the arts, humanities, and sciences, they see the bigger picture and they want to engage it in learning regardless of what time of day it is or anything like that. They want to do that.
Hmm.
And so we're incorporating this concept of flow theory into the Arete School, knowing that if the kids are interested in the subject matter and want to be there, then we're going to have to kick them out of the school grounds, you know, every day at the end of school to get them home. And this is why we're excited, because all the research shows that this is the case, that if the kids love what they're doing, they're going to be there. And so we hope people will support this perspective. You know, for those of you who are listening right now, you know how kids feel about school, and there's no need for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So please support the Arete School. Click on Donate below the screen here and help make this a reality for kids at the Arete School and eventually kids across the country.